Hey everyone, just so y'all know, Carter and I recorded this interview with Gracie a little bit before the publication date for The Last Fallen Moon was pushed back due to supply chain issues. So just disregard anywhere that we say June 7th. Today is June 14th, the official new release day for The Last Fallen Moon. It is out on shelves everywhere today. Go get yourself a copy and enjoy this interview. Welcome back to a special episode of Seaweed Brain. We have not been here doing a special episode in a hot second, so we're really excited to be back with the one and only Gracie Cam. We're going to be talking about The Last Fallen Moon today, sequel to The Last Fallen Star, dropping June 7th, so stick around.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
All right. Hi, Gracie.
Nice intro.
We've gotten better.
Professional and slick. Oh my gosh. Beautiful. Love your work.
We love your work. I am going to do what we did last time and read your website bio, which has changed
quite a bit
since the last time you were here. I'm sorry to make you sit through this, but here we go. Bask in your own glory. Gracie Kim is the best-selling author of The Last Fallen Star, book one in the Korean mythology-inspired middle-grade fantasy series called A Sparkling Yarn by Entertainment Weekly and featured in Time Magazine. The Gifted Clans trilogy has been optioned by the Disney Channel for a live-action television series. It was named a 2021 Goodreads Choice Award nominee for Best Middle Grade and Children's Book, an Amazon Editor's Pick for Best Book, an Indigo Best Book, and Publisher's Lunch Buzz Book.
Gracie is also a contributing author of The Cursed Carnival and Other Calamities short story collection published by Rick Riordan Presents, Disney Hyperion, which became an instant New York Times bestseller. In a previous life, Gracie was a diplomat for the New Zealand Foreign Service, a cooking show host, and once ran a business that turned children's drawings into cuddly toys. She lives in New Zealand with her husband and daughter. You can find her sometimes on Twitter at Gracie Kim, more often on Instagram at Gracie Kim Writes, and always at her website, www.graciekim.com.
Woohoo! That was only a little bit painful.
We actually went back to the outline for the old show that we did and just looked at the two bios side by side, and we're like, we have to do it again.
This is the updated
this is
one.
Like, what a powerful
growth, change, transformation.
Change, yes.
Also, congratulations on the Disney option.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. It's so exciting, but also I think it's really important for me to be very grounded about that. You hear a lot in publishing that it's no until you get a yes. Mm-hmm. But that I've heard in the screen world in Hollywood, it's almost the opposite. You get yes until it's a no. So
yes.
We'll be calm about it.
Yes. Yeah, it's definitely like a first step in a very long, brutal process. As an actor, totally understand.
You would, of course.
Our first question for you, after reading your incredible bio, you know, what is fame like? How's the past year been? You published your first book. It was a total hit. Has your day-to-day life changed at all? Has your writing process or schedule changed at all?
Okay, I mean, first of all, fame? Fame.
You're famous to us.
The last year has been absolutely wild, I have to say. You know, I was just writing the story that I thought little me would have wanted to read, and then other people have enjoyed it, and that to me has just been absolutely wild. But my day-to-day has not really changed at all because, well, you know, thanks to our dear friend, the COVID-inator.
The pandemic.
I have not really done much. So, you know, originally I was supposed to travel to the US and do this amazing tour, and it was going to be amazing, and I didn't get to do any of that. So to be honest, I feel like I'm living this kind of weird life where online, supposedly I'm an author, and in my day-to-day life, I'm like, just still me in my room, you know, I'm wearing like, and listeners can't see, but I'm wearing like arm warmers. I'm just, you know,
the great lounging.
So It's kind of a disjunct, and it's kind of awesome, actually, because it's nice. I feel like I can do what I love and still feel really protected in my bubble. And although I understand that in the end of late June, I'm going to be traveling to the US, all going well. So that will be really cool.
Wow. If you come to New York, I'm coming to the event. Catch me at Barnes & Noble. That takes me to our little next question about, you know, the publicity and the self-marketing author process, which you talked a little bit about the last time you were here. You've got these amazing like printouts of your face that people can take to Barnes & Noble since you weren't able to travel around. First of all, where did that idea come from? And has the process of the author marketing gotten any easier?
I'm shaking my head because no, it's so hard. And you know, I think not all writers, but I think a lot of writers are a bit like me that, you know, we're a little introverted and kind of weird and goofy and kind of timid. And so the idea of putting yourself out there and be like, look at me, look what I've done. I have to actively fight the gag reflex to do a lot of it. It's really hard. But in terms of how the face cut idea happened, so I got this email one day earlier in the year saying, oh, hush, hush, we can't reveal right now. But Barnes & Noble has picked The Last Fallen Star paperback, because the paperback has just come out in May, as their monthly pick for young readers for the month of May. And I was like, whoa, because that's huge. That's like every single store in the US. That's like 600 stores, incredible, each with like their own display table with my book. And I was like, no, you've got the wrong person. Definitely not me. but somehow it was real. And I honestly, my first thought was, oh, that's so sad that I can't be there, because I wanted to go around to every single store and sign all the books.
Yes.
And, you know, make a big thing out of it, because when do you get to say that your book is in the Barnes and Noble little tables and stuff? Anyway, so I thought, I can't go, but maybe I could go. so this one year for my mum's birthday, my mum loves, she's very unlike me in that she likes big things, you know, like she likes being made a fuss of and big gestures and things. And so for her birthday one year, our entire family created these face cutouts, and we wore them like masks, and we all wore matching t-shirts with, again, her face on them, and we just like attacked her with like face, you know, everything. And she just thought it was the best thing ever. She was actually quite mortified. And I remember thinking, ooh, what if we do that? You know, I mean, nobody's going to do it except for my close friends, but oh, well, I'll just put, you know, a cutout of my face blown up as a PDF on my website that people can download. And maybe I'll just create a little reel saying, you know, if you want, you can print out my face and take me to Barnes & Noble and I will love you forever. And people have been doing it. And it's just so much fun. This morning, the Barnes & Noble in Pensacola in Florida have had their entire team get their faces together. And they've created... Okay, after this, please watch it, because it will bring you, hopefully, a fraction of the joy that it brought me. They've, like, created a reel, and it's hilarious. So I'm just having the time of my life, because I almost get the best of both worlds. Like, I'm in the comfort of my home, which is, you know, my place, my safe place. And then I still get to be in all the Barnes & Nobles around the country. It's the best.
I mean, you're giving the Barnes, all the people who run the Barnes & Noble social media accounts also something to do and like content to post, which is just like a win-win for everyone.
Oh, thank you for noticing. I honestly thought like two of my friends would be like, oh yeah, that's cool, let's do that.
I loved it. In my like, you know, I used to do high school theater, and one of our friends' parents would print out the cardboard face cutout of one of
and
our
just
classmates
give that to people.
Every year. Yeah, and he was like, you know, he was never like really a big actor or anything, so it was just, he would always just be in the ensemble of the shows kind of begrudgingly, but every time we would come out on opening night wearing his face, and we would take pictures in groups where we were all had his face on, and it's a great tradition. It works every time.
We should do it more often.
Yeah,
face cutouts are the greatest thing ever. And you know what is also great for people who don't like having their photo taken but want to support fellow authors or fellow thespians or whoever it is? It's a safe way of doing it, because they can take a photo without having to show their own face, which I think is actually quite cool.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I would love to support other people, but I often don't want to, you know, like put my makeup on or like put myself out there. But yeah, if I just have to hold a sheet in front of my face and I still get to support and be part of the fun, I feel like that's kind of cool.
Incredible.
It's perfect.
All right, should we move on to some process, some book questions?
Yeah, so the first process question we have is, you know, since we talked to you for the last book, we were wondering what your transition was between these. Like, did you step away on the writing side? Was it just sort of a streamlined, straight through vision, writing process, etc.?
I mean, you're doing a book a year for the trilogy, so we imagine that's a pretty intense process.
So people often talk about the second book being the most painful thing you'll ever do. Mm. Like there's something to do with, you know, the first book, it's your baby and it's like all your hopes and dreams are in that first child, you know, like you're willing to go above and beyond to like rip it apart, pull it apart, you know, because you want it to
succeed. Okay, it's like raising children.
Yeah. And then I've heard from fellow authors that the second book is really tough because it's like you did the first time round and now you're filled with questions and doubts and, you know, like, do I continue on? Like, there's just so many questions. Like, do I continue on the style that I did? Do I write the same way? What have I learned? I've learned too much. You know, there's just so much second guessing involved. I didn't have any of that, which is really weird for this book. And I suspect it's because it's part of a series. You know, I didn't have to come up with new characters. I didn't have to come up with a new storyline because I had the general idea of the three books at the very beginning before I started. So I kind of knew where I wanted this to start and end. So it wasn't so bad. In saying that, I'm currently trying to revise the third book and I'm dying. Like I'm dying.
Yeah.
Yesterday, don't tell my publisher, but I spent the entire day cleaning my house. I mean, like, cleaning the house. Like,
Procrastinating. The toilet
looked so good. I was like, you know, like grouting in showers and stuff. I was right in there.
That's the intense stuff.
Anything to keep me from opening my manuscript. So I suspect I'm having like that second book woe in my third book.
Right.
And I think process wise, it's because, I don't know, I guess I open lots of boxes in the first books and, you know, this is like, I know this is the final book. So I feel like there's a lot riding on closing all those boxes in a satisfying way. Mm-hmm. I don't know. To be honest, I don't quite know why it's been so difficult this third time round, but yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's good to know. When we read the third book, we'll be like, wow, it must have been so easy. There could have been no strife at all. It's all tied up so nice and neatly.
Or you'll never read it because it will never get done.
It's funny that you mentioned like having the outline of all three books because we were just been talking this afternoon about how many new characters there are in this second book and how basically, you know, I guess spoilers for The Last Fallen Star, if you're listening to this, at the end of the last book, most of Riley's friends and family lose their memories of her. So we're jumping into the second book with all of those relationships in kind of like starting over at like point A, and having to enter into those relationships in a new way. And then also jumping into this new world, into the spirit realm and meeting all of these new characters. So we're curious about like how you handled like so much world building in this book.
So when I was learning the craft of writing, I remember being told not to look at the plotting of a book. You can't just sit down and say, this is going to happen. And then, oh, I'd like maybe this type of thing to happen. And then maybe a little bit of magic here. It has to be consequential. So whatever happens, like whatever is the inciting incident that starts off the adventure has to lead on to the next thing. And then as a result of those consequences, something else has to happen. So everything has to build like a snowball or else the story doesn't flow. And so even though I knew where the kind of three book general path would go, I kind of started drafting the beginning of book two and realized, oh, nobody remembers her anymore.
Right.
Who is she going to hang out with for this adventure? It was almost out of necessity, I guess. I mean, I knew she was going to go down to the spirit realm and I knew the main character that she was going to meet. But in terms of everybody else, I really just came out of the woodworks naturally for the sake of her journey, if that makes sense.
I'm realizing also we haven't done like a brief setup for the plot of this book. For anyone who's listening who hasn't, you know, read any blurbs yet in preparation for this episode, shame on you for not doing your homework. basically, at the start of the book, we meet back up with Riley. She's still living with her, you know, her family, and Hattie is back, but Hattie is, you know, perhaps a little bit ill. She's sleeping for long periods of time, mm-hmm. and basically none of the Gome tribe have their powers anymore because of everything that went down at the end of The Last Fallen Star. So Riley decides to embark on this mission to the spirit realm to talk to Saint Heojun?
Heojun, yeah.
Heojun. To try to encourage him to become the new patron god of the Gome tribe.
Yes.
And restore everyone's powers, save the day. And of course, she embarks on this journey completely alone at the start of the book. Again, mm-hmm. because she doesn't want to, like many heroes and heroines we know, doesn't want to get anyone else involved in her mess. But when she gets to the spirit realm, she does meet some new faces. And some old familiar faces.
Yeah.
Who are trapped down here to go on this journey with her.
Yeah, we wanted to ask about this, particularly because, like, the experience of reading this book, I guess similarly to the first book, was very different, I felt, from a lot of other books that I read, specifically when it comes to how propulsive it was. Like, the amount of turns that make sense, but that are just very completely changing the direction of what I expect we're going to be doing for the next few chapters is so high. Like, when we first get to the underworld, you know, she pulls out her little map and I'm like, okay, this is probably what we're going to be doing
for
the book,
right? Yeah,
like, we
know where we're going. Yeah, I got this. Yeah.
She says, like, there are these people that she's probably going to meet, and these are the, like, trials that they have set up for her. And I was like, okay, great, that's probably the whole book, right? And then, no. We blast through that, and we're on to something else. And I wanted to ask about just how you manage that, I guess. Like, how, like, what do you have to do to be able to string all of these very diverse things together
and
to have these twists like pay off so quickly in the book?
I actually think it's one of my weaknesses, actually, because my brain is so restless. I find it amazing when I'm reading books and in terms of plot, not a lot is happen, but you feel so sucked in and you're like hanging off every word and dialogue and every small thing that's happening and you're just like engrossed in it. I wish I could do that magic. I think my brain is, I mentioned restless before, I'm such a restless brain.
Yeah.
And I get bored. And so I'm like, okay, well, what's going to happen now?
Oh, I think Carter and I are also like that. I'm not good at reading boring books, so this is the book for me.
Yay! Yeah, I think just naturally my brain wants something fun to happen.
Yeah.
I don't know, maybe it's a like a product of our generation now, you know, like everything is short form and we're, you know, mm-hmm. even like tweets are short and I don't know, captions on photos. We mm-hmm. have to consume information in such bites or else we get bored, right? And I don't necessarily think that's probably a good thing longer term, but that is just how my brain works. So yeah, I'm just like, oh, and this is going to happen. Oh, and this is going to happen. And one of the things I got as a tip from a writer friend, which I love, is every time you're stuck at a plot point about what's going to happen next in the story, think about the worst possible thing you could do to your character. And, you know? And then what makes a good book is how your character weasels their way out of that situation to their
right.
triumph. Like, that's the story. But your job as the writer is to create the challenges and obstacles in their way so that the main character can write their own story.
Oh my gosh, absolutely. That's such excellent writerly advice
yes.
for all our writers who are listening. We were talking about different, I guess, like, story archetypes that we, like, or relationship archetypes that we were pulling on bits of. And, like, we were talking, like, oh, the Wizard of Oz. There's elements of that story in here. There's elements of the relationship between Chihiro and Haku in Spirited Away, between Dahl and
That was our first
Riley.
Reading energy. We were like, what is going on here? There's, like, something he's kind of leading, but, like, where is this gonna go?
It's, like, almost like Big Brother energy, but, like, maybe, like,
but maybe
who
not.
Knows?
Like,
were there any, like, you know, other story inspirations that mapped onto this book for you or other pieces of media that were inspiring, besides, of course, the pantheon of Korean mythology?
That's such a good question. I think yes, 100% yes, but I think mostly subconsciously. Because I find often I don't even realize it's happening. In fact, it frightens me sometimes because, you know, we consume so much content from so many different avenues, right? And I don't think we realize how much we're taking in. And so as a creator, and I think this is for all mediums, but as a creator, you're creating, but nothing is truly ever original. Nothing, right. You know, because we're taking from every aspect of life. And like I said, sometimes I worry that I'm stealing from someone. You know, and what if I've memorized, like subconsciously memorized, I don't know, an entire line from somewhere which I read that resonated with me so much. What if I recreate it without even realizing it, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think 100% definitely inspired by things, but I wouldn't be able to tell you exactly from what. Although, so not for Dal, but there is another character that definitely is inspired by someone specific is is this a spoiler? No.
We can figure it out in the editing room.
Okay. There is the king of the underworld, basically. The king of the underworld, who I definitely thought of the actor Lee Min-ho.
Yes. Lee Min-ho, we wanted to follow up about that.
That was the question. I loved him.
I adore him. I think I even specifically mentioned his name there. So
several times.
I did? Oh, right. There we go.
Do you have a favorite Lee Min-ho role? Are there a particular?
Okay. Let's just make this about Lee Min-ho. Right. I think it was in the 90s when he was on the drama Boys Over Flowers. Have you guys heard of Boys Over Flowers?
We had many foundational high school conversations about Boys Over Flowers.
Both versions. Ho.
I mean, there are like so many versions of it. Yeah. Like they just did the Thai adaptation last year. But yes.
It's originally Japanese, right?
The story, it was like a Japanese manga first. Yeah. And then they did like Taiwan and they did Japan. And it was just like,
Of course. That was when I met him and I totally fell in love with him. I mean, he's a douchey character and that is me, but I loved him. And then more recently, I've loved him in King Eternal Monarch.
Yeah,
oh, sure. It's the Netflix one where he's giving historical
garb. Yeah, I watched
it
with my parents.
Yeah.
Who are also fans.
Isn't your mom in particular, like, Lee Min-ho specifically?
She has a calendar, that my dad got her.
Of just Lee Min-ho?
Yes. A new picture for every month. It tracks.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, I love her. Tell her I can share with her.
Yeah. We'll send you one as well.
So, as we mentioned, there like she begins the journey, Riley, like by herself into the underworld. And I guess it is like a very light spoiler to say that she, you know, like encounters other people there. She's not just by herself the whole time. But you weave such an interesting balance between having these elements of the classical hero's journey that is very soloistic in with such a, you know, like rich, resonant ensemble feeling to it, where, you know, we have all of these lovely detailed characters from the first book that are so like rich and specific and who were like introduced to so meticulously in sequence. And then also all these new characters that we're carrying so many people with us and such an understanding, both in like the form of the novel and also in just like the plot and what she's going through about like the degree to which she's interacting with these people. And I don't know what the question is to come out of this. Just like, how did you do this? How did you plan for this to work out?
I think challenge is also in like writing a story for Riley where she intended to go on this journey alone. And she is a really introspective kid. And she mentions sort of, you know, when she's in some of her trials in the spirit realm, how she has a tendency to hide things from people. And she's not always the most honest. While balancing that storytelling with this fun gang of unlikely characters who join up together and all have magical powers.
I don't know. Often I think of my own life and I think of all the people that make me who I am. Mm. And it's almost like, you know, when people congratulate me on my successes or whatever, I always find it really uncomfortable, mostly because of just who I am and my upbringing, and I think cultural upbringing as well, but also because I feel like I am, like, you see me, but with me are everybody else that I stand with and that I choose to be with and that people who support me and stand with me. And No, I just think it's so cool. I just love stories when there's a world of characters because that's what life is like, you know?
Yeah.
And I don't know, I guess the challenge is when you do have lots of characters is to make each one memorable and different so that you're not just talking heads without any kind of separate, you know, you just don't remember them, right? Like, who's that person again? And I think I'm still learning that. I'm still learning how to do that. And then there are, obviously there are consequences to these actions because like I said, here I am in book three and I have billions of people.
But all the better, all the better characters to join into a big final battle, you know.
I know.
The more really characters, ready. The better.
We've expanded so much. It's so impressive the degree to, like, the way you carry all of these people together and are just accumulating more. Sorry, that sounds like
as
we're mounting more
life.
Pressure.
As we do in life.
On the final book. But I'm very excited. I feel that I have so much emotional investment throughout these two books that has, like, really prepared us for where this is going.
Oh, we're excited. We're really excited for the last fall.
I mean, can I just say thank you so much? You guys are showering me with so much praise and I don't really know quite how to take it. I'm feeling quite hot, but I'm also very, very grateful because, you know, it's quite solitary writing and, you know, especially now when I'm struggling so much, it's not giving me pressure. It's arming me with a lot of ammo to tackle those revisions. So thank you.
Oh, good.
Heck yeah. Okay, fun bitty questions that will border on spoilers, but I think we're fine. So I don't know. Maybe this is, if you're like really, really terrified of getting aspects of this book spoiled, I guess, you know, close your ears now. But we do establish that the spirit realm has a lot of similarities with New York City and the various boroughs of New York City, particularly that Midtown Manhattan is equivalent to hell and Queens is equivalent to heaven.
I literally earlier today was on the 7 train and this is all I was thinking about. I was like, I am going from hell to heaven right now.
Yes, Carter and I are coming to you live from Long Island City, Queens, New York, aka heaven. What's your best story of traveling around New York? And, you know, we talk a lot about Rick Riordan's incorporation of New York City into his books and how in the original series it maybe seemed like he hadn't been to New York all that often. And then it's sort of, you know, we grow with more specificity and details as we were like, oh yeah, Rick was doing some trips for research to New York City.
Yeah.
So what's your background with traveling to New York and where did that
idea
come from?
When did you pick New York? Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. First of all, I'm just like Rick. I have never been to New York.
Yes!
Whoa, never. Wow.
You did a better job.
Dying to go. And I wished I could have gone last year, but one day I will go. And my future references hopefully will be better. I spent a lot of time on the internet and on Google Maps.
Yes!
Yeah, walking around the streets on the virtual view.
Like, really, really, lots of walking on virtual view.
I love that.
Timing things. But I've always had, like many people, such a romantic idea of New York. Not so much, like, for me, it's not so much like the big buildings in Manhattan and the, you know, big bright lights and skyscrapers. It's more what people tell me about the vibe of New York being such a diverse place of people from everywhere and where anything goes, you know, like the place of chaos and all possibility. I've always just been so amazed with that. And also because I felt like the first book was so rooted in LA, and I wanted to give it another concrete setting. And I just thought New York would be awesome. So I picked New York and then I thought a lot about how heaven and hell would look in New York. And then I talked to a lot of New Yorkers and they were like, well, Manhattan's not, you know, rah, 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 rah. it's not what it's made out to be.
That was such a good impression of me. Wow.
Red you.
So I thought, okay, hell, there you go, Manhattan. And then I was asking where all the Koreans live. And I was told, you know, they're everywhere, but there's quite a large percentage of them in Queens. So I was like, well, there you go.
You would love Queens, Gracie. Queens is the best.
Oh, I can only imagine. Is it?
Most diverse place in the world, according to somebody.
Yeah, somebody said it one time. I really latched onto that.
People ascribe this to Queens. Yeah. I don't know what that exactly means and how one
census data
quantifies that exactly. Like, but... But it was sad.
Yeah.
Queens is pretty sick.
Yeah, you know, Queens is sick. It's great. Happy to happen. Okay, Carter, okay. Go ahead.
We have to ask about... When I read the passage about the Imuki being named after members of BTS, I was, like, clutching the chair. I was so amazed by your bravery. I was like, how can someone have the real-life courage... To wade into this.
To wade into the BTS fandom.
To wade into ARMY. That is my question. Like, how have you become such a courageous person? What does it take to become someone of such strong moral fortitude?
Okay, now I'm scared.
You're frightening me. Gracie. She's not in the same corners of Twitter that you are. It's gonna be okay.
I've seen some YouTube comments where it's like, whoa, this is so much. And I...
Stan,
this is why I was like, that's brave. That's so brave. But also, I respect it, and I really found it really very funny as well.
Okay, well, if I'm not here next year, you'll know what.
It was the ARMY.
They got me. But also, the Imugis are lovable. You know, maybe not initially, but they are lovable.
We get there. That's true.
Yeah. So don't kill me, please.
It's all a shout out. It's all a call in.
Do you have a bias? Do you have a favorite song you wanna plug?
Favorite member?
My bias is Namjoon.
Sure.
I love him. I love his
very writerly pick.
His, like, you know, big brother vibe. You know,
yeah,
just that
yeah.
kind of like. Come under my wing. I got you. You know, I just love that about him. And I was watching that clip where he's preparing for the UN address.
Wow.
I don't know if you guys have seen that, but he's like preparing behind the scenes. And the others are like being jokey and kind of like letting off steam, just, you know, being who they are. And he's like serious, you know, he's like calm with them when they're joking around with him, but he's like calm and he's preparing and he's so like conscientious and he's taking it so seriously. And I love that. Good, like, responsible man. You know, hardworking, responsible man.
Oh, so true.
Give me a real man any day.
There is reference. There's a specific reference made at a later point in the book.
There's, like, multiple references to this, I think.
There's multiple references to perhaps methods of travel between different underworlds from different cultural mythologies. Care to comment on perhaps the future traveling between said underworlds and perhaps future books?
Okay, I'll be really honest here. I can't promise that there will be travel between underworlds in future books. But I wanted to put that in there specifically because, you know, we all have such different beliefs about the afterlife. And, you know, the author's note kind of goes, oh, I think there's an author's note in there. But anyway,
yes.
You know, the idea that, you know, we all have different beliefs and the afterworld is such a scary area of contention for lots of people because we don't know what happens, right? And there is such a diverse range of options of what could happen to us. And I wanted to, I guess, acknowledge that even though this is a fictional world, that in this fictional world, there's one belief that they have about what happens to us when we depart this earth. But that's not the only way, and that just because this world is set with characters who believe one belief does not discount all the other beliefs that they can and could exist in unison somehow. I wasn't sure how to explore that without actually having the characters go to these places, but I thought, yeah, what if we just mention that actually when you are, just as in Earth, we can take a plane and go to Italy or Greece or Korea or wherever, that perhaps in the underworld it's the same. You know, you have your place that you may have been born into, I guess, or like died into, but you can also then travel and visit other places. And maybe it's just like here, maybe it's like travel, you know, who knows? But I guess it's, for me, wishful thinking that I don't know. I sometimes think of, you watch the news and it's so depressing, all these wars and fights and politics around what is at its core, something as fundamental as religious belief or spiritual belief. Mm-hmm. And often, you know, we're all talking about similar things, or at least if we're not talking about the same God with different names or gods, plural, we're at least talking about the same concept, you know, of a life after death or of an existence mm-hmm. in the after. And I just think it's so sad that we become so disparate in that, you know, like what if it's so hard to understand what happens afterwards, why is it not a possibility that in this impossible next world that we could be united in a similar way? I don't know. I'm not too sure what I'm saying except to say that I love the idea that we could all coexist somehow.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And also all dogs go to heaven.
Also that, yes.
Oh, 100%.
That is a statement in this book. So no worries there. Well, thank you so much, Gracie. That was a beautiful final answer to end on. I mean, yes. Wow, I'm gonna sleep and have beautiful dreams tonight about world peace and accepting and tolerating each other's religions. The Last Fallen Moon drops June 7th, which I think is when we will be releasing this episode. So if you haven't already pre-ordered from Barnes & Noble or your local bookstore, you better hop in your car, get on your skateboard, and zoom, zoom, zoom on over and pick up a beautiful hardback copy of this novel. Anything else you would like to add or chime in or say anything, Gracie?
No, I mean, I really don't have anything else to add except to thank people who have taken time out of their busy days and schedules to grab my book and read it. I just think it's such an honor to have people sharing that with me. And for those people who reach out and share their thoughts with me, honestly, every single message I get makes my world. It means everything to me. And so if anybody wants to reach out, I know sometimes people will stop themselves from doing it because they think that they shouldn't or because I'm busy or whatever. But no, genuinely, I love and read and will respond to every single one. So yes, if you would like to get in touch, please do.
DM Gracie, guys. Thank you so much for joining us. Buy The Last Fallen Moon. Get hype for Last Fallen Realm. And we will see you guys next time.
Yay. Thank you.